Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends. Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Thank Goodness It's Folk, Sheffield's weekly folk program, coming to you from Sheffield Live Radio in Sheffield, but broadcasting to the world on www.sheffieldlive.org and also available after the show goes out as a Mixcloud podcast. I'm James Fagan, broadcasting today. Sam is away on holidays for a couple of weeks, but I'm in no way alone because joining me on today's program, I have the master guitarist Tony McManus, coming to us from Canada, talking about his dear friend, the late guitar player Swy Sibarel, who passed away just last week, and we'll be honouring him and playing some of his most amazing music and the music that has inspired Tony McManus from Swy Sibarel's incredible back catalogue. I'm also being joined today by Andy Irvin, our dear friend from Island of Planxty fame. Andy is playing in Sheffield very shortly with Swedish band Quilty, and I'll tell you about that. I've also got an interview with Finlay Napier and Maz O'Connor, two songwriters who I spoke to while they were recording in Yellow Arch Studio. It's a packed show, all here for you on Sheffield Live. I hope you can stay with me for 2 hours of Thank Goodness It's Folk.
Across the hills, black clouds are sweeping, carry poison far and wide, and the grass is blackened underfoot, and the roses withered and died.
But the roses still are red, love, and the grass is still as green, and it must have been a shadow in the distance you have seen. It must have been a shadow you have seen.
But can't you hear the children weeping? Can't you hear their mournful sound? And no birds sing in the twisted trees in the silent streets around.
I can hear the children laughing in the streets as they play, and you must have caught the dying of an echo far away. It must have been an echo far away.
But can't you see the white ash falling from the hollow of the sky? And blood runs red down blackened walls where a ruined city lies.
I can see the red sun shining in the park on the stream, and you must have felt the shiver from the darkness of a dream. It must have been the darkness of a dream.
Death shall reap its hellish harvest, make a desert of our land.
But the roses still are red, love, and the grass is still as green, and it must have been a shadow you have seen.
The Fagans there with Leon Russellson's classic song Across the Hills, and I started the show with that because I've just heard the news from Australia that my mum and dad, who you heard singing there, Bob and Margaret Fagan, just received the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Australian National Folk Festival for 2025, and they are there, as I record the program right now, they are there singing their hearts out, having received the award on stage in front of a very large audience, including my sister Kate and her partner Pete and their kids Ruby and Felix, and I'm wishing I was there, Nancy as well. We wish we could be there to honour Margaret and Bob Fagan for their 55-year contribution to the Australian folk scene as a duo. And I'm just so honoured that to be remotely involved with those lovely people. They've been wonderful parents to me, and I won't get too sentimental about it, but I will say congratulations, Bob and Margaret Fagan, on your magnificent career and life in music and education as well. And I know that Sam Hindley will join me in congratulating you, Margaret and Bob, for all of that work and for the recognition you've got today. As I mentioned in the introduction to the show, I have several special guests on today's program, and I'm going to jump right in with our first guest. He is an extraordinary guitarist, as you know, born in Scotland and now living in Toronto, near Toronto, in Canada, and his name is Tony McManus. And I wanted to talk to Tony when I heard the news last week that the great Breton guitarist Swy Sibarel had sadly succumbed to cancer at the age of just 70. He leaves a huge gap in the world of traditional music and is without doubt one of the most influential guitarists in folk music, not just in Breton music, but in Celtic music generally. So I'm going to play some of his wonderful music for you now, chosen by my special guest Tony McManus. And after we hear Swy Sibarel playing, you will hear Tony McManus talking to me and choosing some more of his very favourite tracks. This is a very special interview, and for a very sad occasion, but a wonderful man.
Thank you.
Well, we've just heard that beautiful piece of music from one of the bands with which Swai Sibirel was associated, and that band was Gwez. And that was the choice of my guest today to talk about and commemorate his dear friend and colleague and hero, Swai Sibirel. I mentioned last week on the program, Tony, that Swai had passed away. And when I heard that sad news, I thought immediately of you, as many people have, because you've spoken a lot about the influence of Swai on your playing. So first of all, good morning and welcome to Thank Goodness It's Folk. It's nice to hear your voice again.
Thanks, James. It's lovely to connect with you, as always.
Indeed, and thank you for agreeing to talk about Swai Sibirel and his music. That piece of music is something that is very special to you, and it's one of the bits you've chosen. But before we jump ahead of ourselves too far, perhaps you could just reflect on the importance of Swai musically in the world of not just Breton music, but of I guess you could say, the broader Celtic guitar.
Yeah, he's a central figure, I think, in the whole Celtic panoply. Unusually, he was actually born and raised in Paris and then moved to Brittany, I think, in his teens. France, for the Bretons, consists of Brittany and Paris. The rest of the country is fundamentally unimportant. So he moved, I think, in his teens to Brittany. And he took up the guitar relatively late.
Right.
Like there was no child prodigy involved, but once he got into it, he was listening to classic American folk music, Simon and Garfunkel and Pete Seeger and stuff like that. And at the same time, kind of being bombarded with traditional Breton music. So like many of us do, we try and meld these two obsessions, the guitar and the music.
Yep.
And he came up with something totally unique and original and kind of fundamental to the scene in Brittany. He was part of, it's kind of like Donal Lunny in Ireland.
With, yes.
You know, and Moving Hearts and the Body Band and Cool Finn and yada, yada, yada. Swai Sibirel was a founding member of a band called Cornog.
Indeed.
And they were the first to tour the States. They were the first to kind of take Breton music because prior to that, they didn't really play much even outside of Brittany. I'm saying that not really in the rest of France. But they toured, Herschel Freeman down in Memphis, toured that band with some great success. They recorded a brilliant live album.
Oh, it's extraordinary.
In Minneapolis, isn't it? Just, and that was the first Breton music I heard. And I didn't know what it was.
Yep.
Because I had this mentor in Scotland. Well, the closest I had to a mentor was my friend David Gormley.
Yeah.
Long gone now, sadly. I met him when I was 12 years old, and he would bombard me with cassette tapes of, you need to listen to this, you need to listen to this, learn this, listen to this. And he hated Waste. So on an old C90 cassette tape, an album on each side.
Absolutely.
And he would fill up, if you had 45 minutes duration on one side of a cassette tape, if you had 10 minutes left over, he would fill it up with random stuff.
Absolutely.
But he never told me what these things were. So I was listening to this record. I don't even remember what it was, but I do remember what came after it because it was Cornog.
Yeah.
And I thought, this music is really strange.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Irish music, kind of like Scottish music in terms of instrumentation.
Yeah.
Fiddles and flutes and guitars and bouzoukis. But it was different. And then there was this solo guitar piece, which you're telling me you play it. I heard that, and jeez, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
It is an extraordinary piece of music, and I think I, like you, I remember exactly when and who introduced me to that. I was in a record shop in Sydney with the late Jimmy Gregory, who was my mentor and friend in an equivalent way to the man you've just described. And Jimmy was the one who used to play me these things and tapes. And we went into this record shop in the Rocks, and Jimmy said, "Have you ever heard this?" And he put the Cornog Live album on, and I heard that track, and it's a large part of why I wanted to play the bouzouki. And you were hearing the guitar out of that track, and because it is a duet between Jamie and Swai, and it's a fantastic track. Yeah. I didn't play the whole thing last week, so I probably will put that into the show today as well, because it's such a wonderful piece of music from Cornog.
Thank you.
So as well as being associated with Cornog, who I remember thinking, I loved the interplay between the guitar and the bouzouki, and it's something that throughout his career he seemed to be very interested in. He's not necessarily just being a soloist, but he loved to collaborate, and he loved to wind his guitar lines in with another player, didn't he?
That's right. Well, after Cornog, probably at the same time as Cornog, came Gwales.
Yep.
Who were a bigger band, very progressive, very complex arrangements of traditional dance and song. And they would combine, it kind of like Planksy did back in the day. You would have a song with a tune on the end of it.
Yeah.
They would combine dance music and song. And the word Gwales, a Gwales is a lament.
Right.
In French, I think, a complaint. It's kind of like Shamlo's singing in Ireland. There's no rhythm, there's no pulse.
Yeah.
But one of the things the Bretons did very beautifully, particularly that band, was put rhythmic accompaniment to arrhythmical music.
Yep.
And that interplay was just beautiful. But that piece you just played, Sunday's Art, was a kind of an anomaly because it's just guitars.
Sure. Yes, that's the piece we started this segment with.
I heard that. I remember hearing a party in Fort William. It tells you the kind of parties I go to. And I was just blown away. What on earth is going on there? It's a lot of tapping and hammer-ons and pull-offs and what the hell is going on? And I tried to figure it out. Now, believe it or not, that is the right notes in the right order. It's still wrong. It's still fundamentally wrong. So, 1994, I was on tour, my first tour in Germany with Brian McNeil.
Yeah.
And it's just thinking back how exciting it was for me to be on the road in a foreign country.
Absolutely.
And and part of the tour was with yet another Breton band called Penn School, who played each of these formations that are kind of the same people, roughly, but a different agenda.
Yes.
Penn School were totally instrumental, and they played straight dance music for a Breton ceilidh, is called a Festnoz night festival. So they played straight traditional Breton music, beautifully arranged. But I read the tour sheet from Brian. I thought, what? We're on the road with Penn School?
Yeah.
And Brian knew them all and had done for years. So it wasn't a big deal for him. But my God, I couldn't sleep the night before. We met up in Magdeburg, just outside Leipzig. And I was like starstruck meeting. I mean, they were all heroes.
Yeah.
Patrick Mollard, Jackie Mollard, Zweig, Jean-Michel Villon on flute. But the Zweig was the one I wanted to corner, and I basically did. I practically nailed him to a chair and said, "How do you play Sandy's on?" And I think he'd kind of forgotten about it.
Yeah,
come on, Denis. And I played my wrong version of it. He said, "Oh no, come back." It's all about where you are on the neck. I had it, on fret 2 and 4. Fret 9 and 7, and the whole thing flows.
Beautiful.
And I thought, geez, I'm so stupid. I've been engaging with this tune for like 2 years, and you've just explained it in 2 seconds. We bonded instantly, and everything I wanted to learn from him, he was very patient and very generous and showed me.
I was going to ask you about that, about what kind of person he was in that sort of one-on-one situation with fellow musicians.
Oh, he was famously convivial.
Mm.
He was very friendly. You would never catch him in a bad mood.
Mm.
He was famous for smiling all the time. Somebody posted a beautiful photograph from 2000 of himself and myself at a teaching gig in Brittany, a place called Amsoir-Nevers. And the two of us are sitting playing, and Swai is looking at me and smiling, and I'm looking at his fretboard as if I've got an exam to pass.
Tony, we've got more music to play. I'd like you to tell me about this next piece, which you and Swai are on together, and it's a piece called Vigo. Could you tell us about it?
Yeah, it's one of his compositions. One of the things he liked to do was name pieces of music after the towns in which they were composed. So there's another tune we recorded on that same session called Zagreb. Well, actually, it was recorded on 9/11, on September 11, 2001. We just turned the TV off.
Yeah.
And I think we were all shaking, but we recorded Zagreb. But Vigo, we recorded on that same session. It was in Ireland. Steve Cooney was engineering. It was the mill in Naas, County Kildare. And I would cite Cibaril is a huge influence. I was kind of conscious of not wanting to slavishly follow
Yeah.
How he played a piece of music, even one of his own compositions. So I arranged his composition in a very different way, totally different tuning. And we played it together many times, and it works.
For the guitar nerds out there, you play mostly in Dadgad. What was his tuning?
He played almost exclusively in Dadgad, and this was the one exception.
Where he tuned the A's to,
and I could never figure this out. He tuned the A's to B flat.
There
actually, God knows why. And I think he's capable, of the second fret. So, yeah, there's two strings tuned to C. I arranged the tune in C sus 2 tuning, which I got from our good friend Martin Simpson.
Indeed.
So C, G, C, G, C, D.
Yeah.
So we're playing the same tune in the same key, but in a very different way. And then there's the kind of rhythmic section in the middle. Again, a typical Breton thing. The melody that Alain Gentil is playing on bass is a glaise. It's a lament, a song, which has no rhythm. But Cibriel and myself are playing this groove behind it.
And very, very lovely it is as well. Let's have a listen, Tony, to this wonderful trio piece.
Thank you.
Tony McManus, in a trio recording, including Swy Cibarel, who we are remembering today on Thank Goodness It's Folk after his untimely passing at the age of 70. Tony, the images coming from Brittany of a massive funeral, which predominantly seemed to be a joyful occasion and a celebration. Yeah. You weren't able to go yourself. It was a difficult and late-minute thing for you to be able to get to. You were saying that you recognised so many of the people there celebrating him, and it was a real tribute to him, who obviously a beloved figure.
Oh, yeah, he was central to the whole scene in Brittany. Like, from all about the one band we didn't mention was Den.
Right.
Was it yet another combination of the same people?
Yeah.
Mostly. their agenda was mostly compositions. They played very progressive compositions. They had like a full rhythm section, you know, drums, keyboards, Alain Gentil on bass. And his lifelong friend, Patrick Mollard, who led the procession out of the funeral on pipes. Yeah, he was a very, very important figure. I mentioned Abdel Nevez when I was there like 25 years ago. And you could see the affection for him.
Yeah.
And a lot of younger musicians really looked up to Cibarel. He was the guy to follow.
Yep. Tony, there was one of your early albums, one of the first things I ever heard was an album, a fantastic record you made of Quebecois music and Quebecois tunes. And you've talked about some of the Breton influence on your playing. Is it still in your performance these days, those connections?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I put together a set of three tunes that started with a tune written by André Marchand, who engineered that album in Quebec. And there is an old French-Canadian fiddle tune in the middle, La Rêve de Kitu Tremblay. Very typical crooked Quebecois tune.
Oh, I love it.
And then it finishes with Sandita. And so on. I've been engaging with Swy's music for decades, and I love performing it. We communicated very regularly while he was unwell. I was at pains to let him know that his music was with me every gig.
Yeah.
It would be, I had Sandy's on Vigo, a beautiful tune he wrote called Tiolina. Single line stuff, gorgeous. So, yeah, I play his music continuously. He's blaring in the car all the time, whether it's him solo or him in duo or him with one of the big bands.
Yeah.
And the last 20 years, he's been in smaller combinations.
Yes.
Alain Gentil was the kind of the national bass player of Brittany, except Alain lived in Paris. So and when I was based in Scotland, I was working with these guys all the time. And I'd fly to Paris, work with Alain for a couple of days, and then we'd drive to Brittany. Alain is now back in Brittany, and he and Swy were doing duo gigs. There was a great singer, Norwen Corbell. He had a duo going with her. He did gigs with Jimmy McMenemy. He played for dances. He played loads of session work, loads of teaching. Yeah, he's just a very, very active musician.
Well, he'll be sorely missed, Tony. And
indeed,
we're very grateful for your time today to share some of those memories, and also to hear you playing even through the satellite is just lovely. And I can't wait for one. I was away when you played over here in Sheffield last time, but I can't wait for you to be back on this side so we can catch up.
We had a lovely night with Sam.
Good. Yeah,
that's, I hope we get to do it again.
I hope you come this way soon, and I wish you all the best for your tour, which I believe you're going to do a tour commemorating Swy Cibarel. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was very honoured to get a message from Sophie, who's Swy's agent. Another one of the combinations. It's kind of unusual with Jean-Félix Lalanne, who is not a Breton, he's not Celtic, he doesn't come from that tradition at all. His mentor would have been Marcel Dadi, and Marcel was the kind of European Chet Atkins. So it's that kind of alternating thumb style, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Was kind of fundamental to Jean-Félix. And I saw the two of them get together, I thought, wow, that's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And we did some concerts just pre-pandemic. It was the last time I saw Thwaites. Was a festival in Paris that Jean-Félix was organizing, the Autour de la Guitare. And an amazing thing, it was like a week long, and they had different themes each night. And the Celtic night featured the two of them, and myself and Julia and Gilles de Bigot and Dan Arbaz and a whole cast of thousands, some musicians I hadn't met from Brittany, which was great. Jean-Félix is a very important figure in France, not just Brittany. So he and Thwaites had this very interesting duo going. So when he passed, Sophie had the idea of doing a commemorative tour, and she put feelers out to myself and Jean-Félix. So we're now trying to find the time that works. You'll be familiar with that.
When we all get to the world,
sometime in 2038.
Well, I'm sure he'd be very pleased to know that a guitarist of your capability will be stepping effectively into his shoes in that role. It's something you've done before for him when you joined the Celtic Fiddle Festival on tour many, many, many years ago.
Sorry. God, that was 1998. Good Lord. Yeah, Herschel Freeman contacted me and said, "Fly, can't do the tour. Can you do it?" And I did. And, you know, I have very, very fond memories of that tour.
I bet.
If you look at the list of gigs, it's frightening. There was like 29 gigs in 31 days.
Wow.
If you go, oh my God, how do you find the stamina? It was a holiday. It was an absolute breeze.
A holiday, because, I'm sure Johnny Cunningham took extremely seriously in his commitment to holiday.
He was just hysterically funny. A great company and great fun on stage, great fun off stage. The whole thing was just brilliant.
Another sorely missed musician.
His wife Cyril took the gig back.
I bet. Tony, I've got to crack on. We've got a few more things to fit into today's program, but it's absolutely delightful to have you on the show. And
always a pleasure, Jen.
Great to hear your voice and great to hear your guitar playing. And you've got a last piece that is one you're working on at the moment. Can you tell us about this one?
This was a piece that was played at his funeral. He did it to me again. I thought, well, I was asked to play this and I couldn't go. So I thought, well, God, I should learn it anyway. And I threw on the CD. It's on an album of Thwaites called Gwenogen, and it's the first track, and I thought, anyway, I was kind of plodding my way through it. I wrote out the melody in Guitar Pro and then went to add the bass line, and the second bass note was a D, so of course I was in the wrong. I was capable two playing effectively in G, but it's not. It's naked.
Yeah.
It's capo zero, and he plays in A major. Anyway, that's work in progress. So that kind of makes me smile. The fact that his output for me 30-odd years on is still work in progress.
A brilliant thing, and a proof that our heroes are always our heroes, no matter how good we get at our own thing, Tony. And I'm sure we'd be very, very pleased to hear you working away on that and still working out capo positions after all these years.
he's still tripping me up.
Yeah, fantastic, and long may it be so. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts about Thwaites Cibaril with our lucky listeners today, and perhaps you could introduce this last piece for us, Tony.
Yeah, well, this was a piece that was played by the 11 musicians. I was to be the dozen, but it didn't make it. Quand la Bogue d'Or, I looked it up, the Bogue, la Bogue, B-O-U-G-E, it's the husk of a chestnut. So I have no idea what Thwaites was on when he decided to name this tune, but it's a very beautiful piece.
Indeed.
Typical, gorgeous melody with some beautiful chord ideas. And it's his neighbor playing saxophone on this recording. Beautiful stuff.
Fantastic. Well, have a good rest of your day, Tony, and we're really grateful for your time today. I'll talk to you soon.
Pleasure, Jim.
Thank you. was Swai Cibarel from his solo record, but with many of his friends accompanying him on that incredible piece of music. And we thank Tony McManus for joining us today from Ontario to tell us about his good friend, much missed Swai Cibarel. Speaking of good friends we are able to ring, we talk to Andy Irvin as well. And we talk to Andy Irvin because on Friday the 25th of April, Andy will be performing in Sheffield at St. Andrew's Church as part of Live at Sam's with a brand new band for Andy anyway, a Swedish outfit called Quilty. And this will be absolutely new to you in here in Sheffield. They have performed before. They've performed in Sweden, but this will be the first chance to see them in the UK. They're a Swedish band called Quilty who play Swedish and Irish traditional music. And they asked Andy Irvin a few years back if he would join them for a tour. And of course, he said yes. He absolutely loves them, as you'll hear in this interview. But before we talk to Andy, let's hear some of Andy in collaboration with Quilty. And you'll hear what a fantastic sound they make. Don't miss them. In Sheffield on the 25th of April, across the UK and then Ireland.
The last winning post you bought passed it white and the horse and rider both called for sherry, wine and brandy. They drank up a health to the noble grey mare, for she emptied their pockets on the plains of Kildare.
Well, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by our dear friend Andy Irvin, who probably now, as of today, I imagine, is our most spoken to guest in the 10 years we've been doing Thank Goodness It's Folk. And it's an always a pleasure to hear your voice, Andy. How are you?
James, I'm fine. And your voice is always a great pleasure to me as well.
Well, sadly, Andy, I won't be able to come to your concert in Sheffield on the 25th of April, which is greatly disappointing, but I have a prearranged gig down south with Nancy. But I know that Sam and all of the fans of Sam's concert series, Live at Sam's, will be delighted that on Friday the 25th, you will be bringing a collaboration with a Swedish group called Quilty, who will be new to many of the listeners in South Yorkshire. So it's a very exciting thing to see that happening. And before I give the other UK dates, Andy, perhaps you could just give us a quick summary of how you came to be playing with this group of wonderful Swedish traditional musicians who seem to love Irish music as much as they do Scandinavian music.
Well, I was playing a tour in Norway a couple of years ago, and the three of them turned up at a gig in Stockholm, and they asked me then would I think of doing a tour with them in Sweden, and they said it would be in about 3 years' time. So I thought, oh yeah, I say yes. But I was, and then the time crept up, and suddenly there it was. And I thought, oh my God, yeah, I'm playing with the Swedish band. But wow. The very first rehearsal, the very first number we played was fantastic. And they're lovely, lovely boys, you know, and it's as happy a band as I've ever been in.
Oh, that's excellent. And you've been in a few.
I have indeed. But this is a really, they're great musicians. They practice and they're ready.
Yeah.
And I love them all. So I'm so delighted to be able to kind of introduce them to British and Irish audiences.
Fantastic. Will you be playing some Swedish repertoire as well, Andy?
Yes, we will.
Great.
Like two of them, Esbjörn and Staffan, are well-versed in Swedish fiddle music.
Mm.
The other two and me are kind of learning it. But I've fallen in love with Swedish fiddle music, so I insisted that we should play a few tunes. And we're even doing a song in Swedish. So So, and the rest will be Irish from their repertoire and my repertoire.
Since my body lay torn in the wars he was
slain. It's amazing to me to think, I mean, it's a few years since we spoke to you to celebrate your 80th birthday, and of course Sam and I came to Dublin to see your celebration concert there. Yeah. You've since celebrated, I think it was the 50th anniversary of the duo album with Paul Brady. So many milestones, but you are still creating new music and you're still touring. You have quite a lot on this year, including another trip back to the USA, presumably to see some old friends and fans of yours who you wouldn't have played to for quite a while. You're showing no particular sign of slowing down. Are you in full control of this, Andy?
In full control of my senses. Probably not, but I never was. But no, I'm you know, I've already been in Australia twice this year. I was over there in January and February trying to finish my autobiography, which I didn't succeed in doing. And then I came back at the end of February, and then I went back over just the end of March until 5 days ago to play. Not, you wouldn't call it a festival. It was a kind of invitation.
Yeah.
Festival.
Yeah.
And for a very, very good friend of mine. So I felt that I should be there, and there I was. Come and call myself just got home about 3 days ago, and we're jet lagged and waking up at 4:30 in the morning and things like that. But it was great, you know. If you can sit on an aeroplane for 30 hours, well, not an aeroplane, a few aeroplanes, you can do it, you know. So, it was great. I'd go back next week if I could.
As would I, and I'm quite jealous of you, your time over there. We can't wait to get back over there. And
when are you going? When are you going back?
We have no immediate plan right now. Mum and Dad came over, Margaret and Bob came over last year, as you know, and we came over to Kinvara, which they love to do. And they said that was going to be their last trip, but when they arrived in Kinvara, it had been 6 years since they were there, and they so enjoyed themselves, and I'm quite sure that they'll be coming back to Ireland. I will, and they'll be back as soon as they can, and we hope to take the boys over again soon, maybe for Christmas. We'll see how it goes. Andy, I just want to tell the listeners where you're playing, because it's a quite an exciting tour with Quilty. Andy Irvin and Quilty together on stage. They start on the 24th of April at Victoria Hall, a magnificent old Victorian venue in Settle in North Yorkshire. And then on Friday the 25th, you'll be in Sheffield, live at Sam's, presented at St Andrew's Church up in Netheredge. It's a wonderful venue, and the acoustics in there are beautiful. You're going to sound great in there, and I think you'll really enjoy that. Tickets for that are through Live at Sam's website, and we'll post a link to that on today's program page as well. Then you're down in London at the wonderful Irish Cultural Centre in Hammersmith, and then you'll be in Pembrokeshire at Rossa Gilwan, and then you're back in Ireland. You're in Galway at Munro's on the 29th, Don's on the 30th, a gig I remember fondly playing with you. I think I may have accidentally trashed your So Bell that night, but you forgave me afterwards, and I think mine came off worse, actually. Then on Thursday, the 1st of May, you're at the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary, the Sea Church, Ballycotton, Cork on Friday the 2nd of May, Kilmacow in County Kilkenny at the Shanty on Saturday the 3rd, and then you've got a couple more there. You've got Knoll in County Dublin at the Seamus Innes Art Centre. The rest of the dates for the spring and the summer, and indeed your November tour, which brings you back to the UK, are all on your website, which is andyirvin.com. Andy, sorry we can't be in Sheffield, but I'm sure you're going to have a really wonderful time here. And it must be a lovely thing for you at this time in your life to have accumulated just so many friends, not just fans, but friends who you see as you go around the world, as you do. It's surely a big part of why you do it.
Yes, it is. it's my social life, you know. When I get home, I close the door and I don't admit anybody. But I'm really sorry not to be going, not be seeing you and Nancy. That's a real shame.
We'll make sure.
We must get together at some point.
It's time we came to you and visited you at your home. Okay. And also, I feel like you might need a little bit of incentive to finish your autobiography, because there's no use leaving it until you're dead, is there?
It's quite hard to write it after that, all right.
Indeed. Well, perhaps you need to just, you know, draw a line under it and call it Chapter 1, like Bob Dylan did, and then never get around to Chapter 2. But, I mean,
everybody writing about their lives has the same problem. It's easy up to a certain point, and then after that it becomes difficult.
Well, indeed, because your memories of the old days are probably stronger than what you did 2 weeks ago, aren't they?
Well, it's not really that. It's the fact that one's life becomes... I mean, I've written the book chronologically up to about 1985.
Yeah, that's been going.
After that, in the last 40 years, I've been in America about 35 times. I've been in Australia about 40 times. I mean, it would be really boring. So I'm thinking of how to do it, and I think I've got the answer.
Well, we all look forward to it enormously, and there's a lot of people who are going to want that book. Andy, I'll let you go. Give our love to Kumiko, and Sam sends his, and he's very much looking forward to seeing you, as are the good people of Sheffield. And Nancy and I will make every effort to come and see you as soon as we can, and wish you all the very best.
All right. Lovely to talk to you.
And yourselves.
Give my love to Nancy and the boys.
I will do.
And hope to see you really soon.
Thanks, Andy.
Yonder's a ship on the ocean, and she does not know which way to steer. From the east to the west she's a-blowing. She reminds me on the charms of my dear.
The lovely Andy Irvin joining us from his home in Ireland just after 3 days back from Australia in his jet lag state. And we're very grateful to Andy for doing that. And people in Sheffield don't miss him. Indeed, people in UK and Ireland do look at Andy Irvin's website and find where he's touring with Quilty, because as you can hear from that selection I played you from some of their live recordings, they are going to be sensational. I love the harmonies that they're doing. And I absolutely love the double bass playing. I think it brings an immense amount to what's going on there. In the second half of the show today, coming up very shortly, I'll be looking at the next child ballad in our Friday's Child series, and it's an absolute cracker about King Henry V, sung by Richard Thompson. I also caught up with two great singer-songwriters who happened to both coincidentally be at Yellow Arch Studios in Sheffield at the same time, so I grabbed them both for a chance to see what they were working on and what they've got coming up. One of them is Finlay Napier from the Magpie Arc, who is promoting his new solo album and coffee table book, and also the Magpie Arc tour. And you can see Magpie Arc tonight in Sheffield. Don't miss out. It's Martin Simpson's last tour with the band. And I'll also be talking to Maz O'Connor about the new album she's making. All of this to look forward to and more in the second half of Thank Goodness It's Folk. And you can hear the whole thing later on Mixcloud. So don't go away. Back with more soon. Oh,